Okay, here we are. You versus you, episode 0015. I'm trying to go with the not naming it and just going with the numbers and seeing how that works for the next foreseeable future. So yeah, this is your boy Dave Woods coming at you for another exciting episode of You versus You, brought to you by the good people at Imago Dei Digital Ministry. I'm looking at you, Kike, Alicia, Edgar, Alonzo, and special studio shout out to Music Minds in Pasadena. If you want it done right, go to them. They're the good peoples. All right, here we go. I'm tripping out on, I thought today was the day of the eclipse, so I was telling everyone, I'm like, oh, we gotta look up. The zenith will be 11:15 a.m. today, because, you know, it's Friday the 8th. Come to find out, today is the 5th, Friday the 5th, and it helps to look at your calendar and know what you're talking about, because it's all about that timing. So this is now the moment where there's a lot of grace to get the proper gear. Reggie had pointed out, get the glasses where you can not destroy your sight when you see the eclipse. And yeah, this is going to be straight like the movie Apocalypto, where, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen the movie Apocalypto, you might want to cover your ears for the next 30 seconds, where Jaguar Paw is about to get sacrificed. It looks like an awful upsetting of the apple cart, where his world just got destroyed by the local, oh man, I always forget if it's Aztecs or the Mayans, but the warring tribes that he is near, you know, from like, I don't know, I guess 1,000 years ago, was about to use him in human sacrifice for their pagan rituals. And he doesn't get sacrificed because there's an eclipse right when they're going to bring the knife down and take out his heart, right? So it's a huge moment in the beginning of the movie, and then you see, will he survive? Will he not survive, right? So if you're into action movies, definitely check out Apocalypto. It's probably around 2009. So depending on your age, that's an old movie. For me, I feel like it just came out. All right, so the whole thing with this eclipse is it's rare for the path of the shadow to pass over the United States, right? It starts in Mexico, goes across the southern states, and goes northeast through to Canada, right? So there's the touchdown where you'll be able to see the shadow being cast over the land. Such a trippy moment. Thank you again, Reggie, for pointing out not only the accurate date, but then at Doghouse, they do an astronomy night where all the people geek out about looking at the stars, looking at constellations, and everyone just gathers from Caltech and JPL and NASA to talk about the stars. So something so incredibly primal about it, where it's like the original television, the original Netflix, the original entertainment is just looking at the stars, right? So, yeah, Monday the 8th, 11:15, if you're in California, the times are clearly going to, or maybe I shouldn't say clearly, it varies depending on what state you're in, what time zone you're in. But for all my California contingent, it'll be 11:15 a.m. at the height. So don't look directly at it, but catch it. You don't want to miss this. I think the last time it passed like this, like there's eclipses, there's the solar eclipses that happen, but for it to be seen like this, something like 1776, right? So this might be one of those not only once-in-a-lifetime opportunities, but one of those moments where if the clouds cover it, it still happens, but you won't be able to see it. So you can't just say, oh, well, I missed it. Well, you didn't even have a chance to catch it. That's why it's so tricky to catch one of these. So be prepared. Look out for it. Okay. My name is Dave Woods, and I am the host of You versus You. It's all about fitness and self-improvement. Do you have any friends, family members who are looking to get in shape or step up their fitness life? This is the podcast to listen to. For anyone who doesn't know, I have I had a very long journey of losing 100 pounds, and now I'm here to talk about it from firsthand experience and to let you know this is a journey, not a destination. The 100 pounds, I'd say, was the goal, and then the destination was arriving at 235 pounds. But then to now reassess and say, okay, what can I do now? Where can I go now? What has changed? This is a step-by-step way to do it. And my whole MO behind even changing the episode titles to just the numbers are where you could start off at any episode and kind of have a feel for where I'm coming at and what I'm going, and then align it with what your goals and what your visions are for what you want to do physically. Whether it just be getting stronger, whether it be cutting weight, whether it be maintaining, whether it being a total overhaul and doing something drastic like losing 100 pounds. This is all about longevity and being able to live a healthy lifestyle for the rest of your life, no matter what your age is. For me, I am 37 years old and coming in at 240 pounds. And the next step is to push it just like I did for losing 100 pounds over 4 years. But now say I'm going to go even lighter, but then have the mindset and the heart set to maintain that for life. So now my new standard is 240 pounds. I know what it looked like, what it felt like to be 235, then I knew what it was like to be below that, right? High school was a time and a place. The variables have changed, and that high school for me is not 2024. Is that, what year are we in, 2024? Yeah. I'm self-conscious now after thinking that today was Monday, well, I said Friday the 8th, when in actuality it's Friday the 5th, so forgive me for that. The whole thing now is saying, with the cards that I have in my hand and the circumstances that I have in my control, what can I do and where can I maneuver to lose weight? I know what that goal is. It's 185, and it's going to be a way different animal to capture when I'm 240 pounds, right? This is having moved from the old version of myself, which was 335, to now 235. The approximate weight, right? So we'll say the approximate weight was 235, and all things considered, 5 pound difference is negligible. So the new version of myself, which is the standard, is 235 pounds. The scale says 240 pounds. I want to move to 185. What does it take to get there? What's the time frame? This is not a rush. This is the whole thing to consider before doing a huge routine change or something that is so far from the status quo that the resistance that it takes to evolve, that metanoia, that going higher, that leveling up, is way different. If I were to say the old version of myself was 335 and I wanted to go to 185, that looks slightly similar, but the momentum would have to have been maintained that entire time. I think right now, from where I'm sitting, in my vantage point, it would have been great to have said that part. Oh, I want to go. I don't want to just lose 100 pounds. I want to lose, I'll do the math, what, 150 pounds, right? I'm great at math, but right now on the spot, I got a lot of things going on in my mind. So if the whole point being, if I had set the goal even higher, I don't know if it would have worked because it was so daunting. Looking at it now, we could say the first milestone would have been, oh, exactly right, lose 100 pounds. When I got down to 235, say one week off, you know, reset the senses, get used to the feeling of this, but then continue and go, oh, I'm now 235 pounds. I want to go to 185 pounds. This is that moment that people might not consider is, that was a couple of years ago now, right? And so I was content with being 235 and carrying that. Having now moved a couple of years beyond that, I say, oh, I see what I can do. I can see what I can manage. What capacity do I have for going deeper, going harder, right? Oh, there's a ton in the tank, especially having adjusted to it. The hardest part, I think, for people who lose a ton of weight is to keep it off. And there's a good, I don't know what the statistics are, but it says something like, if you did some extreme diet and some extreme weight loss thing, you are at a higher chance of gaining the weight back if you don't maintain it for a year. Maybe it's a year or two. And if you think about it, that makes a ton of sense, because things have changed externally, but they might not have changed internally. What I mean by that is your mind and your heart might be set on, some of those things that might not have been rooted out, where that caused you to be overweight, right? The internal dialogue might not have changed for how you speak to yourself, whether consciously or unconsciously. And if that's the case, you're bound to have that old version of yourself catch up to you, right? And if it catches up to you and you start slacking, you're gonna slowly go back, in some cases, I guess, quickly go back to that old version. For me, I say, no. That version of myself is dead. Make sure he stays dead. And if he appears in subtle ways, I'm just gonna push harder on outworking my old self. And then by then, I can't come back. I think this might be a moment where when you do some soul searching, you know it is something, it's a possibility. In the realm of possibilities, I could get out of shape and start to gain weight and gain even more weight, right? But the heart set and disposition that I have now is to say, every single day, do a little something to make sure the old version of myself stays way, 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 way back in the shadows, stays way, 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 way back in the in my peripheries, stays in the rearview mirror, right? So if that's the case, the new standard being 235 pounds, give or take, I set a new goal, 185. If I am saying this is the new standard and this is where I'm coming from, I don't even consider it an option to go beyond 240, maybe 245 pounds, unless it's just pure muscle, right? So the whole thing now is saying change up the tools and change up the regiment in order to push beyond. Go check out the episode Food Formula, right? Repeat it to yourself. The calories in have to be less than the calories going out, right? You must burn more calories than the calories that you take in. Very easy to do if you're exercising, especially if you're weightlifting, to make sure the caloric deficit is large. You want to, that's the only time you want to be in debt, right? You want the calorie debt, right? You want to have burned so much that when you start eating whatever food it is, whether you're considering it a dirty bulk, clean eating, whatever it is, whatever, however you want to go about it, that's up to you. Having burned more calories than you've eaten, I found the sweet spot of being, of saying around 2,000 to 2,500 calories on an average day, I will be smooth sailing for losing weight. It'd be enough down, enough calories, I should say, enough calories in where I can push myself without being extreme and being able to maintain that for life. The next step, and I'm gonna say this in every episode, I highly recommend and can't stress enough to put a timer on for 6 weeks. Whatever you're doing, do it for 6 weeks. Then look and survey the land to see how you feel and what needs to change. Just recently, having lost fat and gained muscle, I actually put on the most amount of muscle in the last 4 years that I have since high school. And that was because I had adjusted the amount of protein per pound to the amount of calories that I was taking in. What I mean by that is I was coming in at 240 pounds, so I decided to eat 240 grams of protein. That's not going to be for everyone, right? Especially if you weigh, say, 135 pounds. To take in that much protein would probably be a shock to your system, but it depends on the workload. You could do it. But the range for me, because of how much I weigh in pounds, is how many grams of protein I would take in. The tricky part here, which I learned through trial and error, was those Larry and Larry cookies. I love those. It's so delicious, right? They're packing 420 to 450 calories in a cookie. And I didn't know that. And so I had assumed it was around 200 calories due to negligence of not looking and not knowing and just making the assumption it was like a protein shake where whenever I scoop, if you buy your own protein, it's very controlled. And if you buy protein by the shake or the beverage, it's willy-nilly, right? So I'm always looking for, one, it needs to be chocolate because you're not messing up a chocolate protein shake. And then saying the highest amount in grams of protein that there is with the least amount of calories. When it comes to the sugar levels, I'd preferably want to have zero to 2 grams. And I'll be generous and say 10 grams of sugar if it's a pre-made protein shake. But the most important thing in my world is saying the highest amount of protein, lowest amount of calories, right? Not knowing the nutritional value of one of those Larry and Larry cookies almost sabotaged 6 weeks of training. And that was because I did not know the precise number on the back of those cookies. So I felt great. Felt really great to get what my body needed. But then there were some extra. There were some sneaky calories in there due to an oversight, right? And to map it out, I need to bring the in-body composition notes with me, and it shows a spike upward in weight. Like I started to gain weight, but then my fat started to decrease, and it was a stark contrast to anything that I'd done before. And even my man at Yoke Supplement Store was like, "Hey, you're doing great. If you had been in this weight loss competition, you wouldn't have been a contender because everyone here is on steroids." I'm like, oh no. Well, I mean, that's good. But in terms of saying, if you're going to be a natural competitor, right, we call it natty. If you're going to be a natty bodybuilder or a natty sculptor or a natty fitness person, if you are in the same league with people, the term is on gear, that means taking steroids. If you're going to be competing with people on gear, you don't stand a chance, right? With the sports enhancement, the chemical, the steroidal compound that you inject into yourself, I mean, there's other forms of taking it. That's not the point, which I don't support, by the way. Don't cheat. That's cheating in my eyes. If you are in competition with people who are using sports enhancement chemicals, you actually do not stand a chance because of the amount of chemical testosterone that they're putting into their body versus what happens naturally, right? In this moment, and all the studies show this, the people who are taking steroids, even if they don't work out, they get in shape, right? That's how much of a boost it is for a chemical that is found naturally in your body. If you are going up against people who are taking steroids, it would have to be in something that's outside of the standard par for course workout regimen. Like, you'd have to rely on them getting injured, right? And that's not something to hope for, right? The whole point being, my guy was like, okay, if I want to talk to the manager so we can have two competitions, one for people who are on gear and one for people who are natty. And I'm like, yeah, exactly. I want to be in that category, because if I was in that category of people who are not on gear, I might have been a contender. As previously mentioned before, the sleepers who always seem to win are the people who have no gym experience, no weightlifting experience, and they do a total overhaul for those 6 to 8 weeks. And that's because your body is smart and needs to adapt to the amount of stress you put it on. In my case, it becomes a more fine-tuning that you have to do in order to make significant changes, right? Someone who is, we'll go back to another scenario. We'll go back to the, if I was competing with people who are taking steroids, the reason why I would not even be in the top 20 when people are taking steroids is because muscle increases dramatically and fat decreases dramatically at the same time. And if you're looking at the graph that I had for the in-body composition, I was slowly moving up in weight due to muscle mass growing, and then I was slowly going down in fat at the same time. What does that look like? It looks like I either maintained the pounds or gained weight. Standard look, you'd say, oh, well, you didn't really change. But it's all about what's under the hood and what's going on internally. I was getting in better shape and making those gains, but for losing weight, for losing pounds, it was nada. It was negligible from a certain vantage point. All right. Having said that, looking at someone who is on gear, someone who is taking steroids, they would have had, the fat percentage dropping drastically while the appearance of maintaining or slight weight gain. But it would have been very noticeable. It would have been the change between, we'll say, Chris Hemsworth before he shoots an Avengers movie or goes on Thor, right? To what these actors look like right after they wrap on set and they can live their life and they're not training, right? For some people, it's not a drastic difference, but look at any of those Marvel movies, or I always like using any movie with the name Skarsgård, whatever actor's name. I don't know if they're all related, by the way, but the whole point is dude who played Tarzan, the guy who's in Dune 2, I forget which one that is, Sarkin Skarsgård. He plays Fade villainous guy from Dune. All my Dune fans out there, please forgive me for slaughtering the name. But the whole thing is the character in Dune, who you see him in the trailer, he looks like an albino with no eyebrows, right? He's incredibly lean. Like, I'm talking 1% body fat, and is the musculature looks like a statue, right? That right there is not what he looks like when he's not training for a movie, right? The movie The Northman, right? Another Skarsgård, brother, cousin, similar last name. He looked like that for the movie, and then Offset does not look like that, right? Because it's very, very hard to maintain. I don't know if steroid use, I'm not calling out steroid use, I have no idea, I suspect, but the suspicion is not indicative of the reality. The whole point being the training regimen for a movie and then what it looks like for principal photography. That's like when they're shooting the film. And then when they're done with that and it goes into post-production is the difference between training, not training, right? Well, I'm not going to defer to genetic makeup or family history or introducing chemicals, foreign chemicals to the body for enhancement's sake or CGI. CGI definitely doesn't count. But the whole thing that I'm getting at is, actually, I lost my train of thought. What was I getting at? Give me a second to gather my thoughts. The whole thing that I was saying was the amount of time to train for the results that you're going for is also different than what you're able to maintain for life. If you have extreme diet, extreme exercise, and are introducing steroids to the mix, you are going to be looking like Superman, like out of the gate, right? But what is able to be maintained and what is safest and what is healthiest, in my opinion, it's not using any chemical enhancements and doing it the slower way, arguably the harder way, due to longevity's sake and keeping triple digits in mind. I don't know about you. I want to live to be 105. I don't know if that is possible. I don't know what God has in store for me, but all I do know is if slow and steady wins the race. There's a bunch of ways to die, right? But none of them look the same as if you introduce steroids to the mix. I want to have my tendons and ligaments and muscles be in proportion to each other and not have the risk of tearing these things or having a stroke or having a heart attack, right? My diet alone is a reason to be like, oh, I want to save the possibility of serious artery issues just from the food that I eat. So I won't eat food like that all the time. But you introduce steroids, that goes to the roof. It exponentially increases the chances of cardiac arrest. All these people who are young bodybuilders who die, that's typically what happened was it's not an overdose of steroids. It was an overuse of steroids, right? All right. I was not expecting to go on a soapbox tirade about the dangers of steroid use. But now it's very clear how I feel about it. And that's why I always go, I'll say, go natty. Don't take steroids. If you take steroids, that's up to you. But if you're a professional athlete, that's definitely a big no-no. Right? Okay. The whole thing of saying, what can I do for 6 weeks that is outside of my comfort zone, that is out of my norm? What can I do? Me, I'm gonna go in on a workout program for 6 weeks, take a week off, maybe 2 weeks off, and then say, what did I learn? What can I do for another 6 weeks? If you try that, you might find the results to be something that's good, but not as drastic as you were hoping it would be. My two pennies on the matter would say, keep going. Do it another 6 weeks, take a week off. Do it again for another 6 weeks, take a week off. Change up what those exercises are. Change up how you're doing the cardio. Maybe you want to experiment with some lifestyle diet that you wouldn't consider before. See how it feels. Try it for 6 weeks. 6 weeks goes by in a blink of an eye. Reassess. Do what you want. Do it again for 6 weeks. Change up the routine. Change up the diet. Change up the pattern. Do it for 6 weeks. Take a week off. That is the sweet spot for staying on track at a steady, consistent basis. if you are brand new, that would probably be overwhelming to even consider. And that's why, hearkening back to the beginning of this episode, saying, what did I say at the beginning of the episode? Right? My mind goes in one line of reasoning and thinking, and then sometimes it's hard to call back. So, Evan, thank you for having these notes up here. The whole thing is saying, if you are brand new, the first thing to do is write down the goal. Write down the destination, what your hopes are, and then say, how can I do it? What am I willing to sacrifice to get there? This is the total overhaul that we're talking about for beginners, but then it slowly becomes a routine. Well, in this case, it quickly becomes a routine, but then the new transition from the old version of yourself to that point B, that destination, is where all the goodness happens, all the magic happens, all the changes happen right there. If you say, oh, I want to lose 25 pounds, you wouldn't approach it the same way as losing 50 pounds or 75 pounds or 100 pounds. It'd be overwhelming. Instead, you'd say, here's the marker. I want to see how, most likely you'd say, how fast can I do this? And then your body will catch up and say, oh, I can either do this or I can't do this. Or this is very hard to maintain. Where I come in, especially on this podcast, is say, there's a method that you could go about doing this where you won't burn yourself out. You won't be a terror to your family and friends because you're just so hungry all the time. There's a way to going about it where you'll be able to sleep at night because you're not over-caffeinated, right? There's a way to do this without feeling maybe the guilt of using steroids, right? You can do this in a very healthy, long-lasting, consistent basis, and then saying, a year from now, you can look back with even more details and numbers to say, this is how much of a change you made. 2 years from now, if you're sticking to your plan and the way you're going about it, you can say, wow, I definitely made a change. 3 years, you can look back and say, oh, look at this progression from point A to point B to point C, each point being 1 year, right? If you are going down that path, you would be more readily able to just easily admit you can do this for life. This is not a moment where it happens overnight and life happens, so you have to recalibrate, readjust, but keep going. For me, this would be, year eight, I guess? Year six of saying, I'm going to make the change. I'm going to carry out the change. I've made the changes. Here I am. Now I have to climb another mountain. That new mountain is that 185. The pace is way different because the physique has changed. The mind has changed. The ability has changed. I'm not in a race, especially if the time frame is 105, right? Realistically, I'd say if I were to keep my joints in mind, what I would do is walk way more. I would do less high impact things and then just walk more consistently. The secret for years 1 through 4 were a 10-minute walk after every time I ate food. Even if it was a snack, a 10-minute walk. And that was on top of doing cardio when I went to the gym. There it is. It's all laid out as easy as you get right there. If you're looking for anything faster, I'm not going to make any recommendations. Say, just go slow and steady. Here that I am now, I'd say, enter in a fat loss competition or whatever they want to call it, a fitness challenge competition. There's some place around you, just like how every day someone's having a birthday, right? Every day some gym is having a fitness competition. Enter in and see how you do. That'll give you the fire in the belly and the atmosphere of fitness that is conducive to what your goals are, and then you know it's for a limited time. You'll be able to see what you can handle for 6 weeks at a boxing gym, right? That's something that's completely out of my norm. And then the same thing goes if you're doing martial arts. Same thing if you're doing some hiking thing, some extreme, well, I wouldn't even say extreme. I actually just want to talk about the movie Yes Man, where Jim Carrey is dating Zooey Deschanel, and he goes on the Griffith Observatory jogging photograph enthusiast club because she's leading it, right? That would be, like, you know, a good enough motivation because you're interested in this woman. But then it's also conducive to what your plans are for losing weight. All right, rant aside, I'd say when you enter a competition, it changes up the status quo of what your regular routine looks like. And then it's a good shock to the system psychologically too, because it lets you reassess what you thought was possible. If you join one of those Muay Thai gyms and you do it for a year, you're going to see the difference after a year, but it takes a while of getting used to it. If you're going to be joining a swimming club, it's a shock to the system so much that you are forced to change, and then you see how you can add another tool to your toolbox for saying, this is how I'm going to adjust my fitness. For me, that is the secret sauce. It's saying, I know that my life looks like this, and very pointedly, I'm here to lose weight, gain muscle. How fast I want to do it varies every 6 weeks. That 6 week time frame is what's able to be maintained at whatever pace you want to go, because it's you versus you. Right here in this past couple sessions, I know there's been a little bit of a delay with these posts. That was when I had completed the in-body composition phase of getting very accurately, precisely measured with the total body scan. And I have all the stats that go along with it. I will bring it in an episode. The thing about the total eclipse that I think is such a mind-boggling event is that it makes you step out of yourself for a second. And that moment of just looking at the constellations, looking at astronomy, makes you look inwardly and then outwardly. When everyone had lost their mind, I feel like it always happens every New Year's Eve, right? Every couple of years, it feels like someone's like, there's this doomsday prophecy where Nostradamus had predicted that in May, we'd all be done for. And then somehow it gets turned into January 31st, or actually December 31st, right? I think the first time I didn't really consider it, but I thought about it was 2010. I think that was more than like, oh, the Babylonian calendar runs out, so that means we're running out and it's going to be Armageddon, right? I didn't really take it too seriously, but I did consider it and being like, oh, YOLO, right? I'm gonna feast, I'm gonna party just in case, right? And fast forward in time, that's how I got out of shape, right? Was not watching what I was eating. I said that twice. Was not watching what I was drinking. And then found myself not in the physique that I used to be in. And needing to make that change, did it. How does this relate to an eclipse? How does this relate to a doomsday prophecy? How does this relate to New Year's resolutions and all those promises? Those promises of making a goal and sticking to it. I think an eclipse, in a very subconscious way, makes you say, there's something bigger than myself. There are things that are outside of my control. This is a natural phenomenon that is breathtaking. It's magnificent to look at. But then you start thinking, and in that process of thinking, there might be stuff, a bunch of stuff that I don't know. What's in that realm of possibilities? That right there is the moment in my mind of saying, okay, if the world ended because it's been marked in the stars, right? Would I be ready? Right? This is not about anyone else. Because in that moment, it's saying, one day I will be an old man. One day I will die. One day there'll only be a memory of me. And then one day I probably won't be remembered. Right? Father Mike Schmitz had pointed it out that, and it was so cool the way they set it up. He's like, what's your great grandfather's name? Right? Some of you might know, some of you might not know. But then saying, oh, well, you know, he had X amount of time on this earth and very directly was impacted by his parents and then directly impacted your grandfather, your grandparents, right? Well, when was his birthday? What did he do in between time? How did he laugh? Like all those things. That kind of unravels and gets further away from where I'm at right now, because that was his time, his place, and, you know, most people are concerned about their goals and their ambitions, and there's nothing inherently wrong with that. The whole thing is saying, I'll be even more accurate with talking about me. My daughter Catalina has no concept of her great-great-grandfather, my grandfather. And my grandfather was the father figure to me growing up and the image of who I wanted to become. That is way different for, you know, a 3.5-year-old to even visualize because of the age. But there'll be a point where he's going to pass away, and then she's going to say, oh, look, I'm my father's daughter. But then won't really remember my grandfather, who is, we had all these conversations. He's still alive by the grace of God. And just that level of having the gravitas of his presence is not something that's even on her scope, right? And if he lives to be, he's in his 90s right now. We'll say 10 years from now, he'll be 102. If he lives to be 102 and my daughter would be about to turn 13, I guess, like puberty age, she still will only have a glimpse of that the patriarch of the family. And if he, when he passes away, not if when he passes away, only what she has in mind will be the only thing that she takes into the future when she's a grandparent, right? And that those things fade. That was like, what, the most heart-wrenching part of Encanto, the movie Encanto, where it's like what movie was that? Was the animated movie with the little kid playing the guitar, Dia de los Muertos? It wasn't Encanto. Coco, that's what it was, my bad. That was the whole thing with the grandmother and Coco that, like, you know, I'm not afraid to admit it. A tear came to my eye because I'm like, whoa, that is some real stuff, talking about the past memories of the older generation, right? That whole thing right there is exactly my point in saying the way that I look at my grandfather is drastically different than the way that my daughter looks at him, who's her great-grandfather. At one point, my great-grandfather, or say my grandfather, Catalina's great-grandfather, was my age, right? And concerned about all the things that were going on in his world. And at one point, he was Catalina's age, and he was looking at his dad the same way that I'm looking at him, right? And the way that he talks about his grandfather would be my great-grandfather, my great-great-grandfather, is only able to be chewed on and thought on from his perspective, being told to me in, like, in a very familiar oral tradition, right? That you might say, well, and got really far off of talking about an eclipse.
No, I didn't. This is actually right on point. This is level three of the three-pronged thesis, right?
It's saying the looking at an eclipse makes you, if you choose to, you can go down a road of introspection and thinking about life that becomes so existential that it can only be taken in at parts. But that's part of the beauty and part of the wonder of seeing that that natural phenomenon, right? If you choose to beat it out, if you choose to look at and analyze each step, you could say, you can get real trippy with it, right? You could say, oh, well, you know what? I'll save that line of reasoning for another moment. The whole point is saying, part of looking at it existentially is saying, is admitting and realizing that we don't have all the time in the world. Huh. How much time do you have? Well, the only thing that's guaranteed are these 24 hours that we're living in right now. That's part of the beauty of saying the Hail Mary prayer. You know, Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death, right? That's the mystical spiritual reality of saying only two moments that are guaranteed are this moment right now, presently, and the moment you die. I don't have this unhealthy fascination with death. It's the realizing that there's a marker of how much sand is in the hourglass of our life, right? And one day it'll be gone. The thing that had hit me in terms of a reality check was when I found out Catalina was on the way. I have 9 months. And in those 9 months, I said, I need to get in shape. Not, I want to get in shape, or one day I'll get in shape. It says, I don't want to be a fat dad who's not able to run around with my daughter. I don't want to, like, okay, that might work for a little bit because I'm taller and stronger than her, but she's going to be growing. And what happens when she jumps on a bike? She starts pedaling. Well, I'm not going to be able to walk while she's pedaling. That might only work while she has training wheels on. The second she's riding a two-wheeler, I'm going to have to say, I need to keep up. I'll have to keep up on my feet or on a bike, right? Well, the reality is 335 pounds moving is not the same thing as 40 pounds on a bike, 50 pounds on a bike, right? It'll be hard to keep up with a child who has seemingly endless energy as a 335-pound man. Well, that was enough motivation to get me in the gym, and over time, I worked it down to be 235 pounds. Here I am. For everyone else, right? And I don't know, got some time. I have all the time in the world, but it's 15 minutes till I really gotta wrap up my thoughts. Was if I knew I was gonna be living to 105, would I be doing the same things that I'm doing right now? I made the decision. I'm gonna change some things because when I'm 105 years old, I don't want to be 335 pounds. All right. That was then. Right now, I say I'm 240 pounds. If I was 105, I don't want to be 240 pounds. I'd want to be 185 pounds, right? So in that case, I'm scaling back the expectations and the time frame to get to that goal, that new goal, the goal that I have not reached yet. All right, well, when do you want to be 185 pounds? I'd say by 40 years old. So I have 3 years to get it together. That is not a long time. 3 years will go by really quickly. In my youth, I didn't think I was going to make it past 27. I don't even know how I came up with the idea that I'd be part of the 27 Club. You know, all those people who died at age 27 and were mega famous, right? The artists, right? I turned around and was 30 years old and was like, huh, I think I need to prepare more. Huh, where am I at right now?
oh, well, I'm cruising at my time because I can worry about a bunch of this stuff later. Later happened when I was expecting Catalina. And by the grace of God, I accepted it and made that change. I believe that everyone has the capacity to do that, whether it is expecting a new life and the family dynamic to change for this next chapter. And hopefully it's not due to a health scare, right? Although I'd probably say the people who are 10 years older than me, maybe 20 years older than me, when they start having the symptoms of cardiac arrest, that is usually a wake-up call. When people go get a checkup and they find out that they're pre-diabetic, that tends to be a wake-up call. Someone who was standard health and then they're diagnosed with diabetes, right? That's a wake-up call. You can go through the list, go through the litany of health scares where people say, uh-oh, something has to change or I'm going to be going to the grave sooner than expected. I hope that the whole the MO behind these podcasts and just having long form storytelling is to inspire whoever's listening right now to make the decision before the decision is made for you. I can tell you it is well worth it to make some changes now, some small changes. You don't have to go ketogenic diet, right, to be extreme to get in shape. I'm saying you can make some small adjustments, like going for a 10-minute walk after each meal. At first, you're going to say, oh, this is different because it's a new habit. But then over time, that minor change, say you eat 3 meals a day, 30 minutes of walking, which is low impact, will get you in shape, then have you turn around and say, oh, yeah, I used to be X amount of weight. How did you lose your weight? I just went for 10-minute walks after I ate. I am an example of that, right? Now, I'd say you can step it up even harder by doing something that's physically demanding. Probably to the end of the day, in the end of my life, I'll say everyone should lift weights. Everyone should lift weights. Only because it gives you amount of tension on your muscles that are not possible unless you're doing manual labor. If you don't like the gym or whatever it is, there are alternatives. You can get your own weights, bring them home, right? When you start pushing yourself physically with weights, you burn significantly more calories, right? There are exceptions, of course, like swimming. That's why I use Michael Phelps as an example. But the whole thing is going back to that formula, is burning more calories than the calories that you take in from food. Weightlifting gets you there real fast, right? This is also good in terms of mental resilience, is the metaphor of having to push against an outside force, which is those weights in the gym. That changes how you go about your life, how you talk, how you solve problems, because over time you recover and then are able to push more weight than before. That transfers into every area of life. That's why I will swear by it. Everyone, men, women, children, adults, elderly, should be lifting weights. Granted, with the elderly, we'll say for the seasoned, those who are more seasoned in life and are retired, it's going to look differently because of the wear and tear on the joints. There are ways to have resistance, such as using the bands and the weighted resistance in the water, that are just as effective for your age. So don't approach me, all these seasoned veterans approach me and say, hey, I started doing hang cleans and got severely injured because you recommended it on your podcast. I'd say, you didn't go about that smart. I'm sorry for your injury, but if you're really upset, I'll fight you right now. Just kidding. I don't condone violence to the elderly. Okay, my bad. That was James Woods, not Dave Woods. That's so I'm going to defer to. He's the one who said it, not me. All right. So the whole thing now is saying, what can I do where I'm at right now physically? What am I able to do for 6 weeks? Do it for 6 weeks. See how you feel. Do it again. Push yourself slightly more than you did those last 6 weeks. See how you feel. Do it again. If you do that for 3 cycles, that's a good enough amount of data intake and seeing what you can handle, especially for life circumstances, and then just keep going. If the person who I'm talking to right now is between age 16 and 30 and is brand new, you can push yourself way harder than someone who is 30, between ages 30 and 50, right? Just because you are 50 years old and above doesn't mean you can't do it, but things look differently, not just with what you're working with physically, but in terms of what your demands are, what your lifestyle is, and then what that willingness to change is. I really hope no one has to have some life situation force them to change, because this can be very preventative, and it really helps the younger you are, but all hope is not lost if you are older. So in each of these episodes, I'll go through the gamut of things that you can do, but it's always going to come down to what can you maintain if you were to hold this for a year or 2 years. 10-minute walks after each meal will get you there. It'll get you to 105, right? Weighted resistance, and doesn't even have to be that much weight. It'll get you there, and it'll have you be injury-free. Of course, talk to a physician, talk to a specialist, talk to a personal trainer, talk to an athletic trainer if you know one, and then gauge what they're saying against what works for you. Not everyone's the same. People have different history of injury and then also range of motion, so that would impact what you're able to do. But not everyone can make an excuse, right? I didn't finish that thought. No one can make any excuse that they didn't have enough time, right? You'll find out the second you get injured or life happens, and then all of a sudden the priorities will shift and change, and you'll say, oh, there's time now, right? All right. Well, what's the next phase? Don't compare yourself to the past, right? And what I mean by that is don't compare yourself to high school or to college or when you were at the peak of your physical fitness in your adult life. Compare yourself to where you're at starting now, day one, and saying, I'm now on a fitness journey. After you've gathered some data, a year, 2 years, compare yourself to where you were 2 years previous to when you had said, I'm going to begin this fitness journey, and don't look at that other stuff before that, right? It's always going to be in the title. That phase of saying, I've set up a goal, I'm on a fitness journey, I've gathered the data for what I can handle, and I'm continuing forward. Avoiding the pitfall of the pitfall and the mental trap of looking at yourself from the prime of your youth or the ideal physique that you had before the kids or when you were top-tier athlete. Don't even look at that. Hold those memories with fondness, but realize the variables have changed. You are playing the game of life with a different hand now. Realize that and then say, okay, what am I able to do and who's an inspiration? Who's an inspiration for me to keep going? I understand why I'm doing it. I've accepted why I'm doing it, whether it was at first you didn't want to do it, but it was a health scare. And then saying, okay, well, let me get into the zone of making this a lifestyle and something that I just do. I don't think about it, right? I don't think about brushing my teeth. I don't think about taking a shower, because that's such a part of life that you don't just dismiss it and say, you know what, I'm not going to do it because I don't feel like it. That's just part of the routine. This is part of the fitness routine for a fitness lifestyle. After you have that inspiration, hold on to it, remember it, look at it as many times as you need to, as you want to, and then say, what's next? 6 weeks. I know for 6 weeks, I can be as extreme as I want to be, and then I'm going to take a break and assess where I'm at. Every now and then, it's good to have a good jump start when you're on that journey. My recommendation is joining a fit loss challenge, a fitness challenge, where you are against other people for a very specific amount of time and for a prize. I call it putting skin in the game. No matter where you're at in your expertise or in your experience, you can put skin on the game for 6 weeks and it's not a total loss because you learn something from it even if you weren't a contender. All right. Well, that about wraps it up. And so I would say, man, I laugh because I was getting ready to be able to rock for another 30 minutes, and this episode is not done with my notes, not even close. Like, they don't even talk about Jesus at the door, gratitude and thanksgiving, right? But that's not the point. The point is that'll be another exciting episode of You Versus You in the future, and we'll be able to recap. We'll recap what happened with this eclipse on Monday, and then we'll talk about one of the hacks, which is Jesus at the door, and I'm going to save that one. And then the next secret to maintaining the intensity and the consistency is gratitude and thanksgiving. And I'll give you some tips about that. Until then, I just want to say thank you to all the people who've been listening and commenting and sharing. Don't be afraid to like it, subscribe, hit that bell, share it with everyone, and then chime in. Tell me what you want me to talk about or touch on, and I'll do it, and I'll give you a special shout-out. And this, of course, goes out to Music Mind Studios in Pasadena. Big ups to you, Evan. I hope you win the competition for the film. You are a sound engineer extraordinaire. You got this. Go check out the movie Heat. Not just you, Evan, but everyone here. This is so out of context, I don't even know if it's going to make sense. Go check out the movie Heat, and I'll tell you why in a future episode. All right. Peace, peace, peace. And to God be the glory now and forever. Check out that eclipse. Wrapping up. This is You Versus You. I can only give you the key to my success, but you got to unlock the door and walk through it yourself.